Pauline turned to the children, now collected in the front room, still breathless and muttering nervously about what they'd just seen. "Now listen to me," she instructed them. "I don't want of you to say anything about this to anyone. Do I make myself clear? Nobody outside this house is to be about it, all right? I'm going to tell your grandmother and grandfather about it now, in my own way, and then you can leave it to me to tell your father. And afterwards, as I said, I don't want you to breathe a word to anyone, clear?" She looked sternly at them, then bustled them all out of the room and into the kitchen. The moment Pauline's mother saw their faces, she knew something was wrong. When the children had taken their mugs of tea and left the kitchen, she grabbed Pauline's arm and shook it fiercely. "Something happened down there, didn't it?" she demanded. Pauline told her everything, trying to play down as much of what they had seen as possible. The effect on both her parents was just as she had expected. They were shattered. The sound of Billy's arrival home came as a blessed relief. It was not a moment too soon. Her mother was so unnerved to hear what had happened, that she was already insisting to her further that they left immediately. Billy came hurrying into the kitchen with a worried look on his face. "All right?" he nodded in greeting to Pauline's parents. "Pauline? What's going on? What happened to lunch? The table's not even made. And what's up with the kids? They're sitting in the front room looking very sheepish." Pauline took him to one side. Billy, looking even more puzzled than before, followed her out of the kitchen and into the hall. Shutting the door, she told him everything. By the time she had finished, he was shaking his head and cursing to himself. "Oh hell, damn it, why the hell did it all have to start up again?" he was saying, over and over. "I'd really convinced myself in the past few weeks that, well, you know." The words trailed away. He sighed and shrugged resignedly, burying his hands deep in his trouser pockets and slumping down on a nearby chair. "Your parents a bit shaken up, then? And the kids, too?" Pauline nodded. "What do you think we should do about it, tell the police, or what?" he went on. "It beats me." He shrugged again, his eyes downcast. The telephone rang. Billy answered it, then held the receiver out to her. "It's Rosa at the Havenfort Hotel." Pauline mouthed silent protests to him and waved the receiver away. She really didn't want to talk to anyone at that moment. But it was useless. She was already committed to speaking to Rosa. "Rosa, hello love, how are you?" she asked, hoping the question wouldn't be reciprocated. "Yes, I'm fine. Look, I had to call you to let you know that I've just seen. It's unbelievable, really, I couldn't believe my eyes. I was just looking out across St. Bay through my binoculars, like I sometimes do, you know, when I saw this silver, disc-like object come skimming over the fields just below your farm and then, well, it dipped down and went into stack rocks. It just went into them, Pauline, like, well, I don't know, like a door had opened in the rocks and it had gone inside. You will probably think I'm crazy, love. But that's exactly what it looked like. And that wasn't all. The more I kept looking at the rocks, the stranger it got. Shortly afterwards I saw these silvery figures walking about over, coming down from a sort of door that kept opening, shutting and shutting, and then walking to the water's edge and again. It's incredible, I know, but that's what I saw, Pauline dash honestly. There was a long pause. Pauline eventually answered her. "We don't need telling, Rosa. We already saw it all for ourselves. Tina, my parents and I were driving in the car when the disc flew towards the rocks and then the whole family went down the coast path and we saw the figures on the rock as well." She could hear Rosa gasping with relief on the other end of the line. "Thank the Lord, Pauline. I mean, I was beginning to think I'd been hallucinating or something. What are you going to do about it? I feel a bit awkward about it, seeing as how I own the rock, but. Well. I mean, what can I do? What can you do? Who's going to believe any of this? I hardly believe it myself. If you hadn't all seen the same thing, I don't think I would be believing my own eyes." Another pause. Pauline eventually excused herself, promising to phone her back when her confused thoughts had settled. She turned back to Billy. "Rosa saw it, too. She saw everything, love, from the hotel, through those binoculars of hers. Billy didn't look up, so I gathered, he mumbled to himself, then stood up suddenly. Right then, let's try and get a bit of normality back into the house. He took her by the hand and led her into the front room. All right, kids, your mum's told me what you all saw. It is fantastic and a bit frightening, I know, but no more so than what we've already lived through. It's not the same for your grandparents, though. This is the closest they've ever been to whatever it is that's happening here. Remember that. When I fetch them in here, I don't want you all talking non-stop about it, all right. Try not to make anything of it, try and change the subject if you can. Don't upset them, okay? There was no reply, just an embarrassed silence. Billy turned around, Pauline's parents were standing behind him. Before he could say anything, her mother leaned forward and laid a hand on his shoulder. It's all right, Billy, it doesn't matter, she nodded, smiling slightly. If you could just run us back to Milford Haven now, I think that would be best. Do you mind, Pauline? Pauline came over and kissed both her parents on the cheek. Of course not. Maybe that would be best. She watched the children gather around her parents and was grateful that they weren't making too much fuss with their goodbyes. Though her parents were obviously anxious to get as far away from the farm as possible, and soon as possible, as soon she knew that her mother, in particular, wouldn't like leaving the family alone in such circumstances. Ready, Mum? Dad? Her parents nodded and with a final wave to the children now gathered at the window to watch them leave, they made their way out and her mother turned to Pauline at last moment and, hugging her, said, "You shouldn't stay in this place, love. For your sake and for the sake of rest of the family, you should leave before the worst happens." And with that, they were gone. Pauline's gaze lingered on the lane long after the car had gone, leaving only a cloud of dust behind it. She suddenly felt vulnerable again, remembering with frightening clarity the night that light had chased her down that very lane, and the thought made her shiver. Turning back to the house, she could see the children's faces still framed in the window, the same window where that silver figure had stood that night and watched herself and Billy so intently. And now, after all these weeks, it was happening again. They, whoever, or whatever they were back. She couldn't rid herself of the memory of those two solitary, silver-suited figures, standing on stack rocks looking back at her and the family. Had they seen them? How could they have failed to? But what were they doing there? What did they want? She looked up into the darkening sky of the gathering dusk, then down onto the horizon behind the house, from which she could just make out the distant shape of stack rocks looming out of the sea. Greater than ill. Right greater than, were they still there? Would they be back? For some explicable reason she felt that, despite her inclinations, she already knew the answer. Whatever was happening to them, wasn't over yet. Not by a long way. 10. Billy paused at the end of the path to catch his breath, but not for long. He was already later getting home than he'd intended. Dusk was already falling and he wanted to be home before it got dark. He looked around him. Gloom and shadow everywhere. He shivered. This place spooked him worse than ever at night. Thankfully they were now well into December, and midway through the carving season. He was more grateful than ever about that. It meant it wasn't much longer that he'd have to leave home every night at midnight to check the herd. Nighttime was no time to be out alone these days, and the cowsheds were no place to be. He'd never felt the same about the sheds since the night the herd had disappeared and materialized again at that neighboring farm, and the morning when the 16 cows had somehow been transported from one paddock to another in a matter of seconds. Was he imagining the aura the place had taken on since then? Surely not. It was different. Unpleasantly different. The cows were still in a state of perpetual aggravation, of course. Still restless at night and stampeding into the electrical fences during the day, and they were still off their food and giving an abnormally low milk yield, but it went beyond that. The actual place itself felt different. The sheds and outbuildings were normally bitterly cold at night in the winter, chilled by the wind that blew in over the cliffs from the North Atlantic. But not this winter. The air around the farm buildings was now inexplicably warm at all times and unnaturally still. No wind ever seemed to blow there. And it was always so deathly quiet. For some reason, the rooks, crow/crake, hadn't returned that year to cluster in the trees nearby, and there were no starlings, swallows swooping around in the skies like there used to be and should have been. He started on up the path, past the paddock enclosures and into the forecourt outside the cowsheds. The dim light, the single bulb that burned constantly outside the building, barely lighting his way. He'd check on the herd on his way home. Normally it would be routine. But not now, not with all that had been happening in recent weeks. Ever since Pauline and the kids had watched the figures on Stack Rocks. 10 days after that, at this time in the evening, he had checked on the herd just as he was about to do now, only to find they had disappeared again. Every cow, all 100 of them, had gone. Every stall was securely shut, the cowsheds were firmly padlocked and chained, but the entire herd had vanished. The owner of one of the nearest neighboring farms to Ripperstone Farm, Clover Farm, had come rushing down to say the herd had suddenly appeared in the yard in front of his farm and were around up there. Billy had had to go and herd them back. Since then, the same thing had happened, at the same time of night, on 3 different occasions at intervals of 10 days. Billy's nerves were now at breaking point and he was ready for any eventuality. It was just as well. His worst fears, that he would permanently lose any of his stock, had been realized. Over the same period, 2 cow and 3 calves had vanished completely from securely fenced land, while the herd had been grazing in the lower field overlooking Stack Rocks, where the twins had first seen the disc land and scorch marks had later been found. He had explained their loss to the owner of the farm by saying they had stampeded over the cliff edge. He hadn't wanted to lie, but what else was he supposed to have said? Who would have believed that 5 animals had just vanished into thin air in as many weeks? And tonight? What would he find tonight, or not find? He leaned cautiously over the cowshed gate and peered into the darkness, not knowing quite what to expect, and then sighed with relief as his eyes, now accustomed to the dark, made out the shadowy shapes of the cows, still neatly stalled inside. Thank God that tonight, at least, they were safe. He could relax again. Well, up to a point. There was, in fact, little time for relaxation around the farm these days, or nights. He always seemed to have so much more work to do recently, particularly with Clinton now refusing to work at nights anywhere on the farm, or during the day in any of the lower fields. Not that he could blame him. Clinton had borne the brunt of some frightening experiences himself since the incident on Stack Rocks. Only 2 days later he'd come rushing into the farmhouse one afternoon, looking frightened out of his wits. Billy had sent him down to the lower field to repair some fences, and within the hour he'd returned. "That's it, I'm not going down there again, never again," he'd insisted, his voice trembling with shock. "I'd just started work down there, on the fencing. I was crouching down, trying to strengthen a fence pole, when suddenly the shadow of this figure behind me blotted out the light. The sun was so bright, the shadow was as sharp as it could possibly have been. For a moment, I thought it was you, Dad, come to check on me. But when I turned round I was alone, there was nothing, nobody there at all. I ran all the way back home and I mean it, I'm not going down there again, at least not alone." Clinton's help with the fencing was invaluable and it was inconvenient to say the least, but Billy had agreed. Clinton was obviously, and understandably, badly shaken up by what had happened, and it wasn't the only thing that had frightened him. A week later, at this same time of the evening, at dusk, on his way up the same path Billy had just walked, he'd seen what he described as a tall, shapeless column of light drifting up the path ahead of him, towards the farmhouse. He'd watched it glide up the lane and past the house and then fade away before rushing indoors, and telling what he'd seen. In the weeks since then, he'd not mentioned either incident again, but had seemed to become more introverted than ever. Pauline hadn't escaped the phenomena, either. Alone in the house, just after darkness fell, she had been looking out of the window of the front room one night, when the house and surrounding area had suddenly lit up like daylight as she had described it. The dazzling brightness had lasted for a couple of minutes and then, as suddenly as it had happened, it was over. Darkness fell again. Billy shook his head. Was it any wonder this damn place spooked him so much these days, what with everything that had been happening, particularly recently? The conclusions were obvious. It was as if they were being surveyed, studied, as though his family was being watched, his livestock being experimented with. The thought chilled him and he shivered, instinctively pulling his collar up as he did so. He looked at his watch. 6 o'clock. He'd better get a move on. The kids would already have got back from school, Clinton would be home from work at the farm down the road and Pauline would have served up dinner some time ago. He'd leave checking the herd's feed until later, he'd have to come back to the cowsheds at midnight to check on the herd in any case. Turning to make his way home, he smiled to see the welcoming lights from the farmhouse, just a little way up the drive. He couldn't wait to get there. It was strange, though, how alienated he felt on his own farm, with his own family and livestock around him. It was like he didn't belong anymore. He surveyed the scene, the cold, barrack-like, grey cement farm buildings looming behind him, the skeletal shapes of the naked trees bordering the drive ahead, silhouetted against the night sky, swaying eerily in the evening breeze. He quickened his pace. But what was that ahead? Headlamps. A torch or lantern, perhaps? There were lights up there on his right, just beyond the outcrop of bushes that hung over the edge of the drive, opposite the house. He stopped abruptly in his tracks, straining his eyes to try and make out what it was. Whatever it was quite still, but shimmering brightly. If only the damn bush wasn't obscuring his view of it. He inched forward a little, moving slightly to his left, trying to get into a better position to make it out. Useless. It looked like two lights, not one, the headlamps of a parked car, perhaps, but he couldn't see properly. He'd have to get closer. He'd move over to the opposite side of the drive from it, staying close to the wall of the house, and make his way up until he was opposite it. If only it hadn't rained earlier, he wouldn't be making so much noise. Splash, splash, splash. Damn it. But why worry? Why not make a noise? He couldn't explain it to himself, but somehow discretion seemed to be the better part of valor and, well, with everything that had been happening. And now, there it was. A light, no, two lights, two shimmering columns of light, about the same shape and dimensions as human figures, side by side, glowing luminously, quite still, like sentinels. What the hell were they? He felt himself flatten against the wall, hoping the shadows created by the lights from inside the house behind him would hide him from view. But from the view of what? Could they see? Were they creatures, or machines, or just some sort of reflection, optical illusion? No. They were living things. He was sure of that. He just knew it. But what were they doing here? What did they want? Ill. Greater than not of the particular event only Pk made of rune via Jimp greater than he don't move. He knew, somehow, that he had better not. The family, what about the family? Had they noticed the lights yet? He prayed silently to himself that they hadn't, and wouldn't. God, he felt vulnerable where he was. And still, right there, nearly opposite him across the drive, glowing in the darkness, the luminous images remained. Far to his left as he peered down the side of the house, he could see the light from the front room beaming into the front garden and could hear the faint sound of the television from inside. How he wished he were in that room with them. He directed his gaze back to the light ahead of him. Still they didn't move. Or did they? Yes. Now they were moving. First one, then the other. Drifting, gliding, floating slowly over the ground away from him. Away from the house, still close to the hedgerow opposite but moving slowly up the drive, out of the receding glow from the windows of the house and now being swallowed up by the inky blackness beyond. And then, as he watched, gone. Gone, in the blinking of an eye, gone, with the suddenness of an electric light BMG switched off. Billy bowed his head and let out a gasp of relief. For a moment he didn't move but stood quite still, savoring the calm he suddenly felt within himself. Billy? The sound of Pauline's voice, calling out to him from the porch, shook him out of his trance-like state. "Here, love," he called back to her, seeing her silhouetted in the light of the porch and looking anxiously down the drive, down here, by the wall. He saw her look further to her right and along the side of the house. "What are you doing there, love?" He went over to her, took her by the arm and led her into the house. Once inside, she could tell immediately by the bewildered expression on his face that something had happened. The children, she explained, had already had their dinner and were now watching television. She'd put his dinner in the oven to keep it hot. While he was eating, he could tell her all about it. Billy smiled at the suggestion and felt as comforted as she had intended him to be. Since the Stack Rocks sighting, they had pledged each other that they would share any future experiences and not keep any secrets. It was better, they decided, to be prepared for any eventuality, and forewarned was forearmed. He told her exactly what he'd seen. She listened to him without interruption and showed no emotion, though he could tell she was unnerved. The fact that such phenomena were now nothing new to either of them did nothing to allay their fear. The conclusions were as obvious to Pauline as they were to Billy. They were definitely being closely observed by, well, by some intelligence or power beyond their understanding, and the interest in them hadn't diminished, it had intensified. But to what end? What was it leading to? It was waiting for that answer that remained so frightening. When Billy had finished relating what he'd seen, he fell silent, sipping his coffee, staring vacantly into space, his thoughts seemingly a million miles away. If Pauline was worried, it was no more so than he was. She would busy herself tidying up after dinner and then packing the kids off to bed. There was, in fact, something important she wanted to talk over with him, that was directly related to what had happened to him that evening, but it could wait until tomorrow. She'd let him drink his coffee in peace and then have his customary bath, before he went back down to the cowsheds to check on the herd. After what had happened, that would be the last thing he'd want to do, in any case. Dwelling on it would only make matters worse. "Sleep well?" Billy chuckled at the irony of Pauline's question as he sat down for breakfast the next morning. She must be joking, he thought to himself. His midnight check on the herd the previous night had been the most nerve-wracking yet. He'd actually rushed the whole procedure, with only half an eye and half his concentration on what he was doing. Normally he'd have spent over an hour with the herd, at the very minimum, but last night he'd run all the way down there, cast a quick look over the animals, just to see whether any of the pregnant ones were ready to calve, and had then run all the way back. Pauline, bless her, had stayed awake until he got back. "Yes, slept like a baby," he grinned across to her, "when managed to close my eyes." She gave him his egg and bacon and sat down next to moving the morning paper out of his reach, so as to his fullest attention. She'd purposely got the children to school a little earlier than normal and persuaded Clinton to leave early for work, so they could have a once to talk on their own. "What's up, love?" Billy asked her. He could tell she something on her mind. "We're going to have visitors tomorrow," she began slowly, stopping abruptly when she saw the expression on face. Not that it surprised her. She knew the hesitant tone in her voice was probably giving her away, and he knew what was coming next. "And you don't mean members of the family coming over for Christmas?" he asked, frowning now, "but some to do with UFOs or such like, more of those SO investigators or whatever they call themselves?" "Pauline, how could you have, love, after all we agreed?" He banged down his coffee cup and fumbled irritably for cigarette. She knew he would probably guess what she'd done and be furious, and she hardly blamed him. It was almost a year since everything had started happening to them, and for most of that time they had tried to keep as low a profile as possible. Living with such phenomena had been hard enough to do, without having suffered the sort of ridicule, humiliation and inconvenience they had originally endured after they made the mistake of telling the local papers about the light that had followed her home that night and then the silver-suited figure she and Billy had seen at the window. After those reports had come out, life had, for a time, been unbearable. The press, local and national, had reported their story in such a tongue-in-cheek fashion that Billy had felt they'd been made to look ridiculous, and he seemed to have right, to judge from the comical but cruel remarks that some of the locals has made at her expense. At the other extreme, there were the locals who had believed their story, but rather than sympathize, had been openly hostile. And that wasn't all. There had also been the UFO enthusiasts and investigators who had pestered them day and night with phone calls and letters. Some were obviously the product of cranks, others were from enthusiasts who seemed to know their subject well, all of which had stretched their nerves to breaking point. On top of everything else had also been the commercial exploiters, anxious to cash in on their situation and to persuade them to cash in on it as well. There had been the television producer who had tried to persuade them to sign a contract to report their experiences only to his current affairs program, the film executive who wanted exclusive rights to their story for a documentary feature film, and the local hotelier who wanted to include the farm as the main attraction of UFO holidays he planned to operate. The more they had become the focus of attention, the more their friends and neighbors and the local newspapers had implied that they were making up the stories, and ridiculed them, and the more they had been pestered by the UFO investigators, enthusiasts and cranks. But had they been able to get the one thing they really wanted help? Absolutely not. They had told the police that their property had been trespassed upon, their possessions and livestock were going missing, that their property had been damaged and they had even suffered physical harm from intruders. Yet the police had admitted there was nothing they could do to help. They had told the local RAF base and their MP what had been happening, who had in turn told the Ministry of Defense, but what had happened when the authorities had been confronted with numerous witnesses of the phenomena and substantial physical evidence to show that spacecraft and spacemen had been seen near their top secret establishments? Absolutely nothing. Except that the Ministry of Defense first admitted that something strange was going on and then changed their minds a fortnight later. It was no wonder that shortly after they had seen the silver figure at the window, Billy had decided that, apart from the reports they filed with the local BFORA investigator, they would keep secret everything that might happen to them. It was obvious that nobody believed them except the authorities, and they were too frightened to acknowledge what was going on. All they could do was to suffer in silence, as it were, and hope the intruders would go away of their own accord. This they had done for the best part of 9 months, during which the UFO activity in the area had ceased, the press had stopped taking any interest in them and most their friends and neighbors had long since forgotten what had originally happened to them. Only the occasional UFO enthusiast or investigator now telephoned to see if they had anything to report, and their answer was always same, nothing to report. At least, it had been, until that previous day when she had talked for a long time on telephone to a UFO enthusiast who had seemed to her to be particularly intelligent, perceptive and knowledgeable about the subject and, more to the point, he seemed sympathetic. He had eventually asked her if he might meet down to the farm and meet them and talk to them, and she had taken it upon herself to agree. It was this news that she was trying, as gently as possible, to break to Billy. "Yes, love, it is somebody to do with UFOs," she admitted to him, "but before you get too annoyed, hear me out. I know what we agreed about keeping everything to ourselves, but this man, Paul Palmer, does seem to have a of ideas about what's been happening here, and he seems very sympathetic. He really does seem to know what he's talking about, and let's face it, love, things are getting worse recently, not better. You know you're as worried as I am. We could do with a few answers, and if he could at least help us to understand what's happening, well, that would be something, wouldn't it?" Billy looked at her long and hard. She was right, of course. Things had been getting a lot worse lately and they just couldn't go on like this, living from one week to the next, never knowing what to expect or how to deal with it. "When is he coming?" he asked her. "Tomorrow." "That soon?" "It's the weekend, the only time he can afford to take off from work," she told him. "He's a farmer, like you dash from Norfolk. He's coming down with his fiancée, three in it. They should be here about lunchtime. The twins can sleep in with Gia and Clinton tomorrow night, and tea, Hay can have that room and stay the night. Okay, love?" She reached across the table and squeezed his arm. "Of course," he agreed. "To tell the truth, it'll be a blessed relief to talk to someone outside the family about it after all this time." He must know more about this sort of thing than we do, and if he can shed any light on what's been going on, or advise us how to cope with it, then it's got to be worth it. He could see the relief in her face as he agreed to her plan.